Hey everybody, welcome back to the Hull and Rudders podcast.
Thank you. Wow, he's still here after
I had Hull never
after the intro.
Never have I been regaled with such an amazing display of oratory fireworks. That was incredible.
All right.
There's still it's always great to see our guests' reactions to that. We're joined today by Kyle Katarn himself. Kyle Katarn. That's what he goes by. That's what he goes by on YouTube. That's his Twitter, that's his everything. We even have our frequent guest Jack, who we always have on, loves Kyle Katarn, so we always have this quick draw ready to go.
Yeah,
always. So there we go.
Nice. I love it.
But yeah, Jamie and
that's
Matt,
what I look like after a haircut.
Jamie and Matt, how are you guys doing this week?
Doing well.
Great. Yeah.
Very tired, slightly recuperated from PAX, almost 100%. But.
Penny Arcade Expo.
For anybody who doesn't know what PAX stands
oh
for.
Oh my god! Sorry, not to derail in the first few minutes, but no one calls it the Penny Arcade Expo.
It's
they
Penny
call
Arcade
it PAX.
Expo.
Okay.
PAX.
Just
in
let
case
me.
You didn't know.
Just
guys.
Let me. Anyway, welcome to the Hull and Rudders podcast, because I think we got so derailed immediately. Like, we didn't even say, hey, everybody, welcome to the Hull and Rudders podcast.
But yes, welcome back, everyone. Someone's pumped about PAX there.
Jordan, hey!
PAX. You're referring to the Penny Arcade Expo. Right?
I'm referring to the Penny
yes.
Arcade
now we know,
Expo.
Now we know.
East.
So,
yes. Important.
Yes, as we already said, we're joined by Kyle Katarn. Who we've never spoken to before. We've kind of communicated on social media through Twitter and probably other things. I don't remember.
Yeah, this is the first time. It's really nice to meet you guys.
It's a pleasure to have you on. Pleasure to meet you.
Nice to be here.
So to get to know you, we are getting to know you here, but you sort of told us before the show, but so where did the Kyle Katarn thing come from? Like why do you go by Kyle Katarn? Why is that your YouTube name? I saw you share something recently where like someone always searches Kyle Katarn and like, I only find your stuff.
Yeah.
Like, and it makes me mad. So like, how did that all begin?
It's becoming kind of a problem. I don't know. Maybe I'll have to address it one of these days, but yeah, no. Hello there. I'm Kyle Katarn. It's a name that I've chosen and decided to go by for many years now. Both because he's my favorite character. And at least I was playing a lot of Jedi Academy and Jedi Outcast at the time that I started my YouTube channel. And kind of an ironic thing, I didn't have a beard then. And I didn't really look like Kyle Katarn at all. And I swear none of this is intentional. It just sort of coincidentally happened that I then like, oh, I kind of resemble this guy when I have a beard too. Well, that just kind of reinforced I should just keep going with this name.
The more you invoke his name,
taking on its own thing. And yeah, it's gotten to the point now where people are complaining when they're looking up Kyle Katarn related things on YouTube and they just get my channel over and over again. So that's kind of funny. And I'm sorry to that one guy if he's watching.
I like I don't know why the first thing that popped in my head is like the Santa Claus movie.
Yeah.
Where like he accidentally kills Santa Claus, then he like grows a beard. So
oh my god,
he became
right?
Santa Claus. You somehow
you're
became
becoming
Kyle
Katarn.
Contractually obligated.
Yeah. So I think that's how it'll
a Ford Fiesta is going to get replaced with a Ravenclaw. I'm going to go out the driveway. Stuck there.
That's great. That's what's going to happen right there. So I see a lot of people very excited that we're having you on. We're pumped to have you on. We're going
to
get to our community. Yeah, it's going to be a good time. We're going to get to our community question of the week here. And this came from our friend Scout. And it's kind of a tricky one this week. And I'm trying to think of what I should answer as I'm reading it. But favorite obscure Star Wars fact?
I got one.
Begin.
Ready?
Oh, you're ready, Jamie?
Okay. Oh, I'm ready to go.
Already.
Because this is my favorite obscure Star Wars fact. Okay. So on Batuu, there is a radio station which you can hear when you are on Batuu, and it is BSO 401.72. That is the frequency for it, and you can hear it the best when you're in the bathrooms. Sorry, the refreshers, just so you know. But there is like a full lore like behind the radio station on Batuu 401.72, and I am obsessed with it. So that is my favorite obscure Star Wars fact. There's a radio station.
That is fascinating. What is on the radio? Is it music or is it talking?
So it's a combination of music. It's a combination of like pod racing, like broadcasting. It's fantastic. There's a book.
Sounds awesome.
I don't think I have it up here, but there's like a book that is like the Explorer's Guide to Batuu. And it's like, that's where the most of the information like lies about this. Believe me, I consumed so much of it before we actually went to Batuu for the first time.
Oh, dope. There's a Spotify album too?
No, there is, but there isn't. So it's completely different than like DJ Rex and like what he's doing. It is literally
Gotcha.
DJ Rex has like his music and like does everything and like Oga's, but then like there is like literally a radio station you can hear in the bathroom. It's fantastic.
Listen to some pod racing and whatever's going down.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
That's my obscure Star Wars fact.
You're ready to go.
I learned something. I did not know that.
It's my favorite fact, okay? And of course, it's a radio related thing. I got to have that kind of information.
I like it. Kyle Katarn, what is your favorite obscure Star Wars fact?
Ooh, so there's quite a few, but the one that immediately comes to mind, I hesitate to say because it's kind of dark. So in the Legends novel Darksaber by Kevin J. Anderson, the original architect for the Death Star was a man named Bevel Lemelisk. And he's punished by the Emperor for the destruction of the first Death Star following A New Hope by trapping him in a cage where flesh-eating beetles pour in, and they basically eat him alive. In the moment upon his death, his full consciousness is transferred to a clone host body waiting in the cage next to it, and the entire process repeats. And this goes on 15 times. This was Palpatine's go-to favorite punishment in Legends, was to use flesh-eating beetles, which he had genetically engineered himself, to eat people alive in front of him in transparent cages in front of his throne.
What a guy.
I think we're going to see that in the Bad Batch this season.
I think so.
Oh, my God.
Hey, they said.
That hemlock's ending right there.
Yeah. The next couple episodes get dark. I think we're in store for some flesh-eating beetles.
Oof.
For sure.
Yeah, the Kevin J. Anderson Star Wars novels are a wild ride. And there's a lot of stuff that gets snuck in there that like you read it once and maybe don't. That one always stuck with me. I was like, huh, what an image, you know?
What a name. Matt, you must have an obscure Star Wars thing ready to go.
I had one that was like out of universe and then one that was in universe. Like what Kyle said, you know, from a book or like from, you know, expanded media that maybe not a lot of people have talked about. I think we made a short about it once, but it's one of my favorite things. It always sticks with me. And it's from Dooku Jedi Lost. And it's when Dooku is in the Senate chamber and he's fighting to keep this bill that has the Republic provide protections and an army for different corporations out in the Outer Rim when they're trading to fight against pirates and stuff. And he's fighting to keep the bill, but the Senate thinks it's too expensive and they decide to vote against it. They vote it down. And that is kind of the creation of like the Trade Federation's droid army and all these other like independent corporation armies that start popping up before episode one on the same day as he loses the fight to keep, you know, the Republic supplying armies to corporations. He meets Palpatine. He meets a young, you know, up and coming senator from Naboo named Palpatine.
Damn.
So it's like that one fateful day. If Dooku,
and he meets
had
him
just,
during
like,
a professional low too, so he's like vulnerable and open.
Exactly. If the dude just had like some food poisoning or something, the whole thing would have gone differently. And I think about that day in Star Wars history a lot.
If it wasn't for the lobbyists, the Empire would never rose to power.
There you go.
That's true. Okay. I have a couple. I mean, I wanted to think of one that was like behind the scenes, like a random behind the scenes fact. One that comes to mind is in Return of the Jedi. I don't know why this came to mind, but they used a sneaker in the background as one of the ships.
Yes.
And like you can't even really see it, but like they say it in the behind the scenes ILM thing. I'm like, oh, that's really funny. Why did they just use a shoe? I don't know. But
there's also a potato in the asteroid field in the Empire Strikes Back.
Oh, that's right.
They were like, because someone challenged him. They were like, what, you're going to all this effort? Like, a potato would be indistinguishable from these, like, carefully created handmade asteroids. So he proved it. He threw one in
there. I was about to say, unfortunately, they were right. He didn't have to do all that work. He could have dumped a sack of potatoes on the table in front of George, and George would have been like,
paid by the hour.
There you go.
Speaking of potatoes, this is kind of related. Brent asked if I saw the new Ghostbusters movie, and yes, I did. I mentioned potatoes because there's a ghost in it that looks like a potato, and I loved him. But yes, we saw Frozen Empire, and I loved it. And we'll leave it at that because we're not talking about Ghostbusters today. But I did see it, and I loved it. So,
can I actually piggyback off that to make an announcement that has never before been known? So first of all, I have never seen a Ghostbuster movie. But because of that, I'm planning to react to all of them for the first time on my non-Star Wars channel.
Oh my gosh.
So yeah,
first time.
Have fun. And Ghostbusters
reaction is going to be coming soon to Grizzly Wizards. You heard it here first.
Wow. And Frozen
Empire, I guess, will be at the end of that list because they're in chronological order, right? All the movies.
They are. Yep. Are you just going to do a watch through of the movies?
I mean, I'll do a reaction and then a review to them.
Cool.
But I will. I kind of know what I'm in for because, like, you know, they're part of pop culture. So
yeah,
so there's ghosts in them. Really. No one's totally blind to them. Like, I know, like, the theme song and stuff like that. But
there's ghosts, you know who to call, and that's all that matters.
Exactly. And there's a green slimy one or something.
Like Slimer. No spoilers. Yep. But yeah. Slimer.
What? Come on, man.
Well, now I might as well not even
gave away the movie.
Now he knows. Now he knows.
Is there anything left? Like,
no, that's the whole of
Ghostbusters lore, Slimer.
No,
I'm looking forward to getting that started. You just reminded me of that with Frozen Empire.
Oh my gosh, cool. That's fantastic though. Have fun. Yeah, that's gonna be a lot of fun. Huge announcement.
With a final you're gonna live react to Ghostbusters Frozen Empire in the theater with your phone out. You're just gonna be like, whoa, yeah.
I'll bring some LED lights and a flashlight.
No one will be bothered.
Don't be one of those guys.
Matt, do you have any announcements while we're at it? No.
No.
Okay. I thought you were just gonna pull something out of nowhere.
Why would I pull something? It's nothing.
It kind of seemed like there was something, but there really wasn't. Okay. Well, Jamie, we can now talk about the Bad Batch, which is why we're here. Talk about season 3, episode 9, The Harbinger.
Yeah. So I'd like to kick off with the definition of the word harbinger, not to do this like a report, but I feel like that's really important. So by definition, a harbinger is a person and or a thing that announces or signals the approach of something else. So
Oxford Dictionary defines harbinger as...
So the harbinger was actually the foghorn in the background, if you're listening.
Dude, what the hell was up with that foghorn? Who needs a foghorn in Star Wars?
I thought it was great. But let's start from the beginning of the episode. So... new Disney Plus logo?
What's going on?
I'm a big fan of teal as a color, so I dig that.
I love
teal. Don't like the new noise. I kind of like the old noise better.
I didn't notice until the noise. And like I literally was like completely just like zoned out, and then I heard it slightly different, and it was what was that? It was something. But yeah. So this episode was a very cloudy, very foggy and murky Pabu. So that's just like setting the tone for the future. And I don't know. I'm just like a little bit like nervous, like off the bat because of this.
Overcast kind of drives home that nothing lasts. You know, even the sunny weather goes away eventually.
Yeah.
It's been very tropical, like Pabu. Now it's like San Francisco or Seattle.
It's like a postcard. Like it's supposed to be inviting. And now it's like, okay, they've been here a while and they're seeing the other side of like, you know, an off day.
It's like literally like the vacation is like over and whatnot. And it's like, I'm not sure about this place.
For too long, and you're going to hit a torrential rainstorm that's going to get you sick on the last day.
Right.
Definitely not speaking from experience.
Oh, okay. I think that's something that's pretty cool in the beginning was Omega and Batcher are just like running around exploring, and Batcher gets all like antsy, like looking into the cave, and Omega like literally says to Batcher something like, oh, we've already explored this cave. Like, where was their spelunking adventure? I want to know what they were doing before, just like
plenty of times. Like, they've been in there so much.
I have a confession to make. When she does not say cave, she says cavern. And when she says cavern, I heard Kevin and I was very confused for like a good minute because I didn't hear what she said. All I heard was Kevin. And I said, what? And so from then on, it was like, I was just, every time they were in the cave, I was like, it's Kevin, the cave, Kevin, the cavern.
That's your announcement.
That's my announcement.
That you thought they said Kevin.
That they thought, I thought they said Kevin.
Brent brings up a good point here, though, that Lothal was beautiful when we first saw it. And, you know, obviously the Empire came there and made it look crappy. The Empire hasn't come to Pabu yet. And hopefully they don't, but I'm pretty sure we know that they probably do, right?
Well, what does a Harbinger do? It warns about the coming, the next thing that's coming.
True.
Like the Foghorn.
Even before the cavern, I thought there was a really nice moment showing that Wrecker and Crosshair are becoming like familiar with the locals, like they know each other by name now, and
yeah,
like, relationships are being made on the planet, which means stakes are going to be higher. And like, you know, when the other shoe drops, it's going to be rough.
Yeah, I love that as well, because it's like, even though like Crosshair clearly doesn't want anything to do with anyone else, still, he's still like doing it and like helping out others. And I just love to like see that like continue on.
Mm. Why does he have to be so like? I mean, I know it's the way he is, but why does he have to be so difficult? Like, why can't someone thanked him and he was like, ugh.
What?
Like, have you ever like worked retail?
Yes.
Have you ever had like an extra terrible shift? Like that mental state you're in for the first 5 minutes after you get off that shift, that's Crosshair's whole life. And that's why he interacts with people the way he is, because he's only seen the worst of people.
Rough
from both sides, you know?
That's a good way to put it. That's the best way someone's put it so far. So
he never had a childhood. He never had a chance to calibrate emotionally in any sort of a way. And all he's known is killing. And everyone, he comes at every interaction with like this antagonistic, like everyone's a potential enemy until he knows who they are.
Yeah.
That's like a hard thing to turn off.
Guilty until proven innocent or something for him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
He's suspicious of everyone around him.
So anyway,
he might not be, might have a reason to be.
Being suspicious.
Yeah, he has his reasons. And Jamie, I don't know
where you're
going next, but I know one thing we just saw in our rewatch is the details in this show are just so good. And the one we noticed this episode was Hunter and Wrecker stand so close to each other.
Yeah.
And Crosshair's always like a little bit farther away from them.
Pretty far away.
And there's like, that could be because he's the standoffish. Sniper. Yeah, the sniper is always more isolated. Maybe he's more standoffish. Or maybe there's also like that room that Tech isn't there.
Yeah, so.
And that could be it too.
I think we have a lot to unpack with all of that.
Yeah.
You could feel the absence, the negative space. Like there's someone missing that's supposed to be in this dynamic.
Yeah.
But also there's some truth to that. Like his training is so deep. Like he's like, I got to stay out of melee range at all times. Always be ready for ranged attacks, no matter what.
Could be why he feels isolated and, you know, separated so much. Is because
he's not like buddy-buddy with them yet again.
That too.
No, he was a lot better in this episode, especially like with like Hunter, but like we'll like get into that. But I didn't want to bring that up so soon, but he does, there's a good amount of times in this episode where he is like standing farther back from everyone else. But I mean, if we think back to the Clone Wars arc and season 7, like he's always done that. He's just like stood behind everyone, just like really far away. Like think of like the shots in season 1, episode 1, not to reference this specifically, but they go to, I think about it all the time.
I know you actually do.
they're talking to like Master Balaba, and it's the four of them at the time. So Hunter, Wrecker, Echo, and Tech, and then Crosshair is just like back there, which is like, that's like always like how it was. He's always just like chilling behind all of them. Like, it's just what he does. He just watches and observes. But I feel like in like these like newer episodes, it is like also slightly more intentional, where he does not feel comfortable coming that close. And like, he knows that there should be one more, even though
it's ironic too, because that was originally his role. And now it kind of shows his distance from
the
dynamic that he originally belonged to.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Kind of a visual double entendre.
A little bit.
It's almost like this show is, it's very well written.
It's just a bit
layers in Star Wars.
What? Crazy, dude.
Never.
So I guess my last other thing from earlier is trust the dog. Always trust the dog. There's always something going on. Like Badger sniffed her out immediately. She knew something was going on, and then she was terrified.
Chad brings up a good point.
I love the Lassie energy when she went to go grab the rest of the gang when
Omega fell down the well. What do you mean? Well, quick.
Who did we talk to a couple of weeks ago? Who was it? One of our guests. We were literally making that joke. Like Batcher was the Lassie of the group.
Was it Chad or
Batchy.
Alex and Molly? I don't know.
Might have been.
Maybe it was you. I don't know.
I'm not against. I'm always
curious. My most standout was I was trying to figure out what kind of texture Badger is. Like, is she more of a seal or is she like smoother than that?
She's smooth, like
I think kind of blubbery texture, like a seal, I think is the right.
Really? Okay. I see her as like rough,
what is a dry seal feel like?
I don't know, but like, you know how like you've seen like pictures of like against the grain, it like sticks up funny.
A pit bull.
Like velvety short hair, but it's covered in like wax or like something to like, you know, streamline. That gross. It's not like super waxy, but it's just like a little.
Also, can we appreciate that Batcher is just like Crosshair's dog now?
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Like Crosshair petting her more than anyone else, and it's not even necessarily conscious on his part. She just chose him.
This is like when your dad doesn't want a dog, and then you get the dog, and then the dog gravitates to the dad.
That's Crosshair for sure.
Yeah.
So Omega fell into the cavern. Omega fell into Kevin.
Kevin.
Yeah, and they come back, and it's Ventress. And so I know that she was in the trailer, but
she entered Kevin.
Yeah.
Any sort of a surprise to you guys, like actually seeing her show up in this episode? Or
I really resent that it was not. You know?
Yeah.
I feel like she didn't need to be in that trailer. I was already gonna watch it, and I feel like a little bit of surprise was stolen from me because of decisions the marketing team made. Like, I would have loved to have not known that ahead of time. But yeah, no, I knew it going in pretty much that this would be the episode.
I agree for the most part, but I'm actually kind of glad. Because my stupid nerd brain, continuity-wise, would have been screaming the whole episode. I would have been literally like, she's supposed to be dead, she's supposed to be dead. Like, in my brain.
You needed a moment to do your prep.
Yeah, so I needed
a moment. Granted, Grand Inquisitor what? Getting stabbed that time.
Literally would have been. Dude, when we were at Celebration and the Grand Inquisitor got stabbed in the stomach, and literally the five of us were gathered at the TV going, well, he could have survived. The stab doesn't look too bad. Like, oh, you know, we were going back to the trailer. Like, oh, maybe there's more scenes with him that we haven't seen yet. Like, I don't think he's dead.
He's got four stomachs, bro. He's like a cow.
That was just
every theory.
Literally, like, my brain would have been focusing on that. And I know it's bad. And I know that's stupid. But it would have been.
Well,
so I am kind of glad that.
Matt. Since you bring that up, I'll also bring up this statement that they literally posted the day the trailer came out, which was, we don't want to spoil anything, but we want fans to know any new storytelling with Ventress will align with the events of Star Wars Dark Disciple. Brad Rau, the executive producer. That was posted on January 22nd of this year.
Yeah.
When the trailer came out. Because everyone was like, oh my God, what happened in Dark Disciple? They're leaving it alone. I want that to be said. Yeah. Dark Disciple is being left alone.
I know.
Spoilers for the end of that book. She dies, gets put into bath of Night Sister, like magic, and that's it. What do Night Sisters do? They're magic.
What is that bath stuff called? It's called the Water of Life.
Yeah. So, like,
she just wakes up. That's a rough time waking up at the bottom of a lake.
You put her in a big gooey pod and then it turns on with a bright light and then the scene cuts to something else. That's not a definitive, okay, nothing ever came of that. Like, come on.
Yeah. So,
when Night Sister magic starts glowing green, like, you know, things don't stay dead. That's not how.
Exactly.
Not how it worked. When she uses the force on the fish are glowing green.
I think
that they were bioluminescent fish because when the monster comes up, he's got that same bioluminescence dripping out of
his beak. He's got a bunch of green slop on his beak.
Yeah, he just like ate everybody.
He ate all the fish.
I was going to mention that later too, but I wanted to put the Ventress thing to bed immediately. In which
There's nothing to put to bed. Everybody knows that they've released statements saying like, guys, relax. Like,
referring to it as a retcon is incorrect.
Exactly.
Right.
It's not a retcon.
Anyway.
It's a continuation.
Let's move on.
Yes. Exactly.
Consider yourself warned. The Empire will hunt you down.
I think we'll get an expanded explanation for that in the next season of Tales of the Jedi. That's where I agree.
We can talk about that later, of course, at the end. But like, I think
they're setting up for something, you know. And so I look forward.
Backdoor pilot.
That's
been thrown around a lot.
Why is that term suddenly everyone realized that's actually a term, like literally this week? And it's like, come on, just
what's a front door pilot?
The last time backdoor pilot was being thrown around, I think, was Boba Fett's reemergence in season 2 of Mando.
Yeah.
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 Everyone was like, "Oh, the backdoor pilot for Book of Boba Fett."
Of course, the Book of Asajj.
The Book of Asajj. I'd watch. Lord. I'd watch it after this episode. Yeah. This
episode two, Din Djarin shows up. He's 5 years old.
That'd be great. And then he's her Grogu. So then she carries him around in a sack and is like,
"You see some kid, and he could be anyone, but you hear that fucking slide whistle, and you know it's him." Yep.
Oh my god.
Perfect.
Anyway, so Ventress and the boys are immediately like really standoffish with each other, right?
Big time.
And then she immediately just gets to the point of like, "Fennec sent me, and I have the information, but you need to tell me why you want it." And I love how Omega tries to like beat her on the bush and saying, "Our friend needs to know about MCOUNT." It's just like,
great
girl,
job. Great.
Omega's
a great 5 seconds.
Yeah, literally. Like, and then as soon as
she has no poker face, poor Omega. Yep. She immediately drops it.
Yeah. She tried. But yeah, and then like Asajj like goes on to say how I love it. She just gives them the information up front because like that was what her task was, in which she ends up saying she believes, or the MCOUNT is believed to be more capable of wielding the Force, and your blood doesn't make you Force sensitive, but you would need training to do so. I mean, like,
emotion from Ahsoka.
Yeah. So like, I don't want to like open up the can of worms of the argument of inherent ability versus anyone can be trained, but that's essentially like where we're at this point in time, where like some people obviously would be more inclined to like wield the Force. Like they would like know like from birth, and then others of just like anyone could be trained based on whatever, because Ventress straight up says everyone has it like in them, just at varying different levels. And I'm just, you guys know how I feel about it.
Talented individuals in the galaxy are using some degree of the Force every time they do something talented.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's always
Han Solo's piloting ability is because of his innate Force sensitivity, which is lower on the scale than Luke Skywalker, but higher than, say, a gonk droid.
Yeah.
Not all gonk.
And even like young Anakin, obviously his MCOUNT was off the charts, just being a good pilot in general as a little kid and being a good pod racer.
I heard a theory once that one of the reasons why his MCOUNT as a child was so high was because the Force exists outside of time, and they were reading both him and his son.
Whoa.
Because him and Luke's MCOUNTs combined was the reason why it was so high off the chart.
Jeez Louise.
Which doesn't really make sense when I think about it, but he was telling me that it's because, like, if you think about the world between worlds and the way that it works, and it's outside of time and space, the Force could manifest in that way, and like sort of like before it's even happened, it's already happened in the Force, you know?
I kind of like that in a way, but
way too much information.
It's a lot to think about.
I just think Anakin is born Force jacked. I think that's just how it is.
It's like, is the chosen one the bloodline, you know?
It's a good question. That kind of seems to be the case.
Because it was, of course, virgins in the first place. They were like, he was created out of,
yeah.
Well, anyway, that's X-rated. We won't talk about that.
Where is Gonky?
I also another good Brent comment here. He was very excited to hear the word midichlorians.
Yes.
Yep.
Which is, I mean, yeah, it's great. But like, if you rewind 25 years ago, people would be like, no one liked hearing midichlorians.
What are you talking about?
They pussyfooted around it so much. And then up to this moment, they were like, okay, fine. I think people are ready for it. We'll say midichlorians.
Do you think anyone out there was like,
a couple episodes back and sort of like hid behind the bush and were like, what are they going to do? What are the fans going to do?
That's what they've been doing since season 2 of Mando, you know, when they drop the MCOUNT and everybody's like, MCOUNT, MCOUNT. yeah, so it's good to know, like, they actually know the word midichlorian. It's nice.
Chad is asking, where is Gonky? Is he okay? And I have to tell him, I have to reassure him real quick. He's right here. He's fine. God.
Oh, he's good. Good.
Gonky. He's just taking a little break.
A breather on this episode. He wanted to rest for a while.
Hanging around with Kyle Katarn. Which is a great fan fiction.
He's gonna come back Beskar plated. It's gonna be great.
That sounds
I
like
do
a...
that in my tabletop Star Wars game that we play. My sidekick is a gonk droid, and I kitted him out with Beskar, so I'd like in gunfights I use him as rolling cover, and he just waddle through a shootout, and I just like crouch behind him picking people off.
That is amazing.
We have to get you on.
I was thinking the same thing, Matt.
Our create a character, create a game, whatever. We do a bunch of them. They're always used to just like flex your creative muscles. But
pretty much we make a character for an RPG without doing the RPG.
Sounds, I love it. I love it.
Exactly up our alley.
Yeah.
We have a whole like encyclopedia of them so far. But
oh, that's great.
We'll,
just a little bit. All right. So, yeah, that's I'll get right out there.
That's a backdoor pilot for when we do that with Kyle. So, yeah. <going to. laughs>
People who listen to like our podcast know that I am super against Omega becoming a Jedi. For the sole reason of I just want her to be normal. I want a main character who isn't a Jedi. And I think that like for the way that it's moving right now is I think that she eventually will have some sort of control, not control over the Force, but just be more like reassurance like of herself and just like knowledge of it. But I don't think that she's ever going to become like a Jedi.
Yeah, I think this was kind of like,
I don't think we'll ever see her get trained.
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think
really.
I think she has a Force aptitude, and she has an enhancement just like the rest of the batch, obviously. And I think that what hers is her ability to learn.
You know, yeah, exactly.
For other people, and I think that can be a Force power. You can make an argument that it's because of her Force sensitivity. She's so good at, you know, learning from everything around her.
Right.
So yep. You three think that she will not become like a Force user?
Become a Jedi. Becoming a Force sensitive.
You think she's going to gain like the rudimentary like push and pull at some point in her arc?
I think possibly
develop in that direction.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, like I always think of the example of Churrut in Rogue One.
Sure.
He's definitely not a Jedi, but he definitely is connected to the Force, and I think that that's something that like I could see Omega finding like another like plane of existence kind of like feeling. I could definitely like see her doing that of like opening her mind to just like accept the Force more and just like use that as a resource her training has been soldiering and that's it, and so like she's not necessarily closed-minded to it, but she just doesn't know.
There's something really profound about she's a young girl in her childhood being raised by a bunch of dudes who literally never had a childhood. It's not just that they lack the tools to give her what she needs. They can't even relate to what it is that she's experiencing and or needs. So teaching her to be a soldier is great, but that's all she's experienced. And she doesn't know anything else.
And now we have like another layer of like unrelatability. They have, you know, they fought alongside Jedi. They have no idea. Yeah, no, exactly.
This episode was interesting in that it feels like it marks one of the first times that they're kind of shown and viewed as obstacles to her, holding her back from certain things, as opposed to like they've always been her greatest assets. Like if it wasn't for the batch, blah blah blah. And now it's like, well, she needs to realize her own potential as an individual, and maybe they are now they're roadblocks in the way. And it's that dynamic is shifting. And if this wasn't the final season, I would speculate that the next season she'd go off on her own, and it would be the adventures of Omega doing stuff, and the batch wouldn't really be central anymore.
So that's super interesting that you like mention it now, because I don't want to jump to my comments about the music, but I'm going to now. So there's like a really good moment in this episode where it's the three of them, Crosshair, Wrecker, and Hunter, fighting together, and the Bad Batch like theme music like swells really loudly, and then the next thing you see, it fades into Omega's theme. And so I think that exactly the only time that we hear the Bad Batch theme music is when they're all fighting together as a unit. So the fact that they like decided to do the three of them fighting together and play the theme music and then have Omega doing her own thing. That's huge. That's a lot bigger than we think it is. Like that is a lot bigger than we think it is.
And you know, when you talk about like the Jedi, not people always use that in a very negative light when they say they take children. But it's more like the parents giving up the children to the Jedi.
They take children in a fun way, you know.
Yeah.
But this is the first time I think we've ever really gotten a perspective where it's like, holy crap, I don't want Omega to become a Jedi. I want her to stay with the Batch. I love the Batch. I love her parents. I don't want her parents to give her up. Took 3 seasons of like build up for that moment for me to, I mean, let me just tell you right now, this was my favorite episode of Bad Batch of all time. Which is extremely predictable if you know me. I am a Jedi person. I love training sequences, and training sequences on Pabu were just
TLJ vibes.
Yeah, absolutely.
The island and the balancing.
Absolutely.
Oh yeah,
big time.
You know, with the first test, with the balancing, with the fruit on her head, at first I thought she was messing with her, and she was going to give her like three BS tests, and then one that was actually like science, like just like tester blood at the end of it all.
Well, she did give her the BS test. You know, sending her to grab the flower was kind of just
whatever it is that she's like to in the galaxy. She's still like flying by the seat of her pants, and she's pretty broke right now. And the fact that she kept catching the fruit on Omega's head, like she was not about to let it touch the ground. And I think the reason is not just she was flexing like her reflexes. That was her lunch. Like that was the only food she's got. She's like, I'm eating that thing later. Don't let it touch the floor.
I like that.
Doesn't it end up hitting later or no?
No, it never does. It never does. Every time.
Yeah. She was flexing though, just not even looking. Just
even when like the guys are just like watching the entire time. Like, I love this entire episode is some combination of the guys just like watching of what's going on. And Ventress just like knows immediately. And it, she doesn't like falter like at all. Like,
oh my god,
those are like my favorite moments. Okay, the binoculars. So first of all, we have the three like dopes like sitting back up at like something like, overlooks Crosshair looking through his rifle, and the other two each like with their own like binoculars, and just just like the look in Ventress, the gasp that Wrecker makes, it is like that might be like my favorite like Dee Bradley Baker like noise in a very long time. Because like it was perfect.
It was unbelievable.
Yeah. It was fantastic.
For sure.
There have been some really good vocal performances. I was really impressed with the previous episode, the Praying Mantis guy.
Yeah.
He was talk about peak character design. Like, oh my god.
Big old bug guy. Peak sound.
Yeah, when she turned her head and just glared down the binoculars, that was so funny.
Yeah, just the big pulse noise. Oh my god.
And then just Crosshair using his sniper rifle as binoculars is just amazing.
Of course.
Very Umbrella.
Very Dwight Schrute.
Yeah, I made that little meme earlier on Twitter. So safety on.
Yeah. Guys, can I just say, AJ, I know how you made that meme. I love how there's already a ship name for Ventress and Crosshair. Do you know what it is?
I do. Do you want me to say it?
Do you want to say it? I don't think Matt knows what it is.
Ass hair.
Wait, really?
It is.
Oh my god, I joked about that in my reaction.
There you go.
It's flowing around already. Like half like unserious, but also because it's so silly. It. That's the name.
Ass hair.
I can't.
Well, how do you feel about that? Or like, what's the alternative? Cross truss?
Yeah.
Corsage.
Corsage. Corsage is not bad.
Corsage isn't bad, but anyway. We got way too far ahead. Matt is so red right now.
It's the funniest thing I've ever heard.
Oh my god.
That's the funniest thing I've ever heard.
Jesus. Well,
let's bring it back in. So
I was actually going to talk about the training sequence with the rocks, and this was actually targeted to Matt. Matt, yep. What would you like to? You're being targeted about this. What would you like to say regarding the whole training sequence on the rocks in The Last Jedi and all that jazz?
Jedi training sequences in front of a setting sun, or like just on a little nice little cozy island. Cool. That's it. You know, that's what I live for. That's all I'm here for. And I really could not get enough of it. It's kind of funny that, you know, obviously Jedi training is all about like balance. It would seem like everybody at one point has to like do some kind of weird thing. I mean, Omega's was kind of easy. You just stand on one leg. I can do that.
Have you ever stood on like remember when we went out to see that lighthouse and how slippery
that's
those rocks
true.
Were?
That's true.
Yeah, but could you ride all the way up a mountain on a pit bull?
It'd be tricky. Probably not. Probably not.
Batcher technically passed that test. So does this mean Batcher has a high M count too?
Maybe.
Oh yeah.
Huh.
Batcher would not slip on that rock. You know that much.
I think with the Force and Omega, this is kind of our Sabine Cup episode. Like I think we're getting the tease. Like it always kind of comes through in Star Wars. Like we get a tease with it. And we all kind of knew Sabine was going to use the Force by the end of Ahsoka season one. And I don't know if we're going to see Omega full on like. Use the Force, push someone over, pull someone, whatever, hold someone in the air. I don't know.
Force high five.
That's what we're gonna see. But with Batcher, now that we're talking about Batcher, do you think back in the beginning of this season, Batcher being calm around Omega, do you think that was kind of her accidentally using the Force to calm Batcher down? I know she was giving her food and like treating her well. But do you remember the part where she was like settled down and like holding her hand out a little bit? Maybe that's looking too far into it.
No, that's why the lines are really blurry when it comes to does the Force take credit for everyone's abilities? Because animal husbandry is a skill
right.
You know, like you can know how to calm down an animal without the force. Like it's not necessarily like a direct one-to-one. Oh, this guy's force sensitive because he's good with X, Y, Z. So like it's hard for me to navigate that notion because I'm like, I don't want to like take the credit away from the people who are skilled, like the characters who are talented at these things. You know, they're not necessarily all of that credit goes to the force. I think it just goes to her innate ability to pick. She probably observed the droid and saw how he was doing it. And then I was like, oh, I can do it better than that. I can do it humanely. And the animal just naturally responded to that.
Yeah.
It probably. I mean, it could be the force. It could all lead back to the force. And like, there could be some revelation in a future episode that when we rewatch the show, we'll see breadcrumbs of her ability like everywhere. We're just missing that tiny little piece of context to make it clear to us, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We did see the, you know, somebody using the force to kind of calm a wounded or angry animal down in this episode. So it's not too far-fetched, I suppose. I just think her like innate empathy and just like kindness. I don't want to credit that to the force because you're right. Kindness and empathy exist without the force. But I do think, you know, just the way that she's able to empathize with people is there is like a strong connection to just life. That she has, that I think that's probably, I mean, again, I loved seeing her train as a Jedi or supposedly trained to pass a test to be force sensitive, but I don't think we're ever going to see her use actual physical force. I think it's all going to be kind of like those subtle, like maybe reflexes or just kind of like, you know, empathetic,
you know, what could be interesting?
Calming techniques. What
every emphasis we have of someone is being trained in the ways of the force, it's to be a Jedi and to fight. Omega doesn't want to fight anyone. She never has wanted to fight anyone. She's always, it's just kind of just been like she was like soldier trained to do so, but I don't think that she ever wanted to fight anyone. So I think that'll be super interesting if she does eventually get to explore like being some variation of force sensitive, and she just learns like a more spiritual side of it. And it's not necessarily used in a sense to be fighting people all the time. Because every time we've seen like Jedi, what do you think of? All lightsabers, you're going to fight. Like, that's what you think of. Like, I think that it would be really interesting if they explore like the other side of the things of the of the ways of the Force. Because.
Which is the true Jedi way.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Exactly.
Kind of like Avatar Aang finding a nonviolent solution. You know, all the training is like violence focused, but there is another way and something else to explore. I wonder if Lucasfilm is slowly retooling our textbook definition of what it means to be and qualify as a Jedi so that we can take all of these characters and put them together for Luke's Jedi Academy on Osis, have a show about that. And you can have Sabine in there now, you know, you could have Omega in there if she chooses to be. They can cut using this M count definition. You can kind of make anybody you want part of that new Jedi graduating class, you know?
Mm. Yeah. And talk about the king of nonviolence. That's Luke. Luke wins the day when he chooses nonviolence twice, you know, in Return of the Jedi and The Last Jedi. So Omega would be right at home in his academy if she ever wanted to train as a Jedi.
It's wild we're at this point, because I know earlier this season on Mount Tantus, we were like, oh, her blood just works with the thing. Like, she's not necessarily, doesn't necessarily have a high M count herself. But then this but episode just brings us like, all the way back, like, oh, Omega and Luke's academy. It's wild.
I mean, they're having their cake and they're eating it too, because we never actually get an answer as to whether or not her M count is high. We have like, you know, Asajj skirts around the topic, but we never actually get like a solid concrete, like, yeah, she's super force sensitive. She has a high M count or whatever. Although that is pretty much the implication.
Do you think that Asajj like also had like the blood sample test like on her ship, or was she just doing these like psychological tests? Like,
I think she was looking to see if Omega exhibited some kind of like force reflex or force.
She secretly pricked her with the little thing that Qui-Gon used in the Phantom Menace, and then she was just making her jump through hoops for the fun of it.
You're talking about the women's razor.
Yeah, the little
Gillette. Women razor comb. Yeah, the little Gillette.
But she was just testing the blood for infections.
Exactly.
Well, she can use it for two things. She can make sure that she can, you know, assess the M count, and then she can also take the little plastic things and get three lines of dialogue from any character that she has the action figure for. She was like,
hell yeah, dude.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Tech.
Ready to go.
That's what we call it.
I always
technology.
Because it has Yoda on it.
Jeez, look at him. There he is.
You have the other thing with you?
I don't have it. It's like in my closet, just like off to the side. I don't have it like on me. But I do have it batteries are operating. It works. I have all the chips.
By the end of the episode, we need it.
No.
What's the tense thing about that toy is that it comes with a belt clip?
Yeah.
You can take it to go.
Well, you can like have it handy in case of emergency, you know, when you're out.
In case anybody needs some Yoda lines real quick.
You quickly need to bust out your Watto, you know.
Next celebration, oh. Rhett, you got to carry that thing around.
You're going to do token lines just all the time.
I just got to carry all the chips in my pocket.
This is how I choose to communicate from now on.
Anyway, so I absolutely adored the fight between the boys and Ventress. Like, that was very cool. That was like a really, really like well done fight on all accounts. And they all got their asses handed to them.
Dude,
and
it was well choreographed. The moves themselves were cool. The situation really cool. Was silliness. It was.
Yeah.
Why would the Bad Batch try? Like, it's clearly they wanted to show us her yellow lightsaber.
And that's definitely.
Like,
oh, it's absolutely.
They
and it's
just
so funny.
Read her file like 5 minutes ago.
We talk like, about them being dopes. They are dopes. They're complete dopes.
Huge dopes.
So, every time the Jedi Council had to tangle with Ventress, they sent multiple Jedi to deal with it.
And they're like, I think I could beat her with my fists. Yeah, I think I can take
I'll be
her
the one. It's the henchman syndrome, you know, like five henchmen fight Batman in an alley. Like, four of them out. Henchman number five's like, I'm going to be the one.
I got this guy.
I can't believe I'm going to take down Batman.
20 years of my coworkers dying, but I'm going to knock him out. Let's go.
Literally.
It was very Batman.
I mean, like, we say that like every week that the Bad Batch are just a bunch of dopes because they don't think they really don't. They just rush into the fight sometimes. I love the little detail earlier of like Crosshair like rushing up with like the data pad saying, oh, I checked Tech's old files. You're right. It's her.
The picture was so funny.
Yeah. It's just like, it's her.
Look,
like Ventress, we found your Instagram. What's all this droid shit?
And that's one of the moments she like looks back at them, just like, what is wrong with you guys? Like, it's perfect. But yeah, the fight was very good, and they all lost. And Omega runs back in, like it's the gift from like community of like Donald Glover returning with the pizza and everything's on fire. Like Omega's literally like, what is happening? What are you doing? Put them down. Like it's such a good little moment.
Enters in the air, Wrecker's on the ground, and Crosshair's just out. He's
Crosshair,
like not Crosshair, even participating anymore.
Crosshair has like, the worst like, stomach ache, like known to man. Wrecker is the one being like strangled, and Hunter is just like at like lightsaber point, just like.
There is a scene in the fight that I absolutely love, and it's a split second. You see it. Wrecker gets kicked and he falls down, and when he's down, he does like a little twitch, and it's so funny to me. He's like twitching on the ground, like tweaking while his brothers are getting like the crap beat out of them. I like watched it last night again just to make sure I wasn't like crazy, but yeah.
Crosshair?
No, it's Crosshair. Wrecker is like, the one who's like on the ground. He's like twitching. Mm-hmm. He's,
okay.
I love the slap. Open handed.
Yes.
Slap.
Yes.
Because Ventress knows how to properly fight people, especially hand to hand, like without any sort of like aid, and like she knows what to do.
Hit
all of like the points and whatnot, and like she knows everything for like, especially for like someone bigger like Wrecker. She hits all of his pressure points. She goes for the back of the knees. She hits his good eye, and then at the end, like she has to like use the force slightly to just shove him over completely and like nearly kill Hunter in the process because he gets barreled over by Wrecker.
Force bowling.
Just had to make that point at the end. She's like, okay, that's what hand to hand does. Here's 1% of my force powers.
Exactly.
Over. Like, are we done?
And then they continued the fight. Oh my god.
Somebody asked if it was mocap, and that was the first thing I thought as well. Because it was like the best choreographed thing.
There was something different about it, wasn't it? It did feel a little bit more fluid.
It reminded me of
Maul Ahsoka fight in Siege of Mandalore.
Yeah,
exactly.
Quality to it.
I haven't seen direct news about that yet, but I would not be surprised if they did something similar. I feel like I saw a post that said the people who choreographed and staged this just like really like kung fu movies. And so it might just be like that sort of influence, but at the same time, it may have been mocap. I'm not sure. But it definitely showed that a lot of care was taken for the scene.
Yeah.
Completely.
Really well done.
When I was reacting to the episode, Bendu thought that she was using force speed in the hand-to-hand.
Do you think
she was using a force power, or is she just that fast?
I think she's just that fast.
I think she's that fast. Yeah,
I think she was giving them a fair shake. I think when she threw the guns away, she wasn't going to cheat. She was going to actually go toe to toe with them. So I don't think she used it, but it was flipping fast.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the year of yellow.
She does that little kata and gets Hunter on the ground. like just like
that was sick.
Mirroring every move, like every strike before she, it was so satisfying.
Yeah.
I've always loved watching Ventress fight because she's so graceful. Like she
always
there's a couple fighters that make it really look like a dance, but she's like top of the list every time. Very, very like flawless.
It was a great reintroduction to Ventress.
I like how the whole thing with the fight ends in which she just like pretty much ends it with saying we're all pawns in the same war and we all lost. And I thought that was really, really, really powerful. And essentially just like leaves them with the thought of I'm not your enemy in this moment. And it's in that moment that Omega is just like, okay, well, we should try to trust them. And then the boys go and they have their chat and none of them trust her. And to the point where even Crosshair is just like, you're being naive. And I love how Omega immediately like dishes it back to Crosshair again of saying well, I trusted you and you changed. So we're going to hear this out. I just love it again that Crosshair is still trying to like, I guess go against Omega, but at the same time, just totally support her. Cause like,
he's trying to look difficult. Out for her, you know?
Yeah.
He
goes against her out of caution and out of like care. But the support is more important. Eventually, he'll side with her.
Yeah. So let's talk about the sea monster, I guess, since we haven't really gotten that far in the boat.
I feel so bad for that poor guy.
Yeah,
he's fine. So
he gets summoned out there, and then he gets jumped by a ship, and like it's like from his perspective, he's like that was an attempted mugging that he very narrowly escaped from.
He's just in his home. Yeah.
So this creature was called a Vraithian.
Okay.
So they're of Vraithian. It was in the article breakdown today. But yeah, I mentioned it earlier. He's like fresh off of eating like the pod of like squid like beforehand because it has like all like the green goo like dripping out of its like mouth.
That was such a cool effect. Also, I love that he had the pulsing like phosphorescence on
that was
the exterior, like a deep sea creature would where there's no sunlight, you know?
Yeah. So I thought that reminded me a lot because like, you really noticed it at the end. That reminded me a lot of the way that the Pergil pulse before they make the jump to hyperspace.
Yep.
And like obviously, like this guy isn't jumping to hyperspace in the ocean, but I thought that was really cool that like when it's at ease and it's calm, it'll just like pulse with like that light. That was very cool touch with just the lighting there.
That's what I'm saying. Like he's eating home. A school of fish, then he finds a boat and he's like, okay, don't mind if I do. Ventress starts like fighting him off, and then suddenly he gets like someone's taking shots at him from a shuttle, and you even see a reaction shot of the monster. He like throws his tentacles up and he's like, what the fuck? Like, what is this?
Like he's literally like you called me.
You called me.
This
here.
Is true.
What did I do?
Strike me? What is this?
What is this?
I said good day, sir. And then he's just like
back into the ocean. It was a setup.
Reminds me a lot of the creature. Was it called Meebo? I think. Bebo.
Yeah, in Resistance. Bebo.
Oh yeah.
Bebo, yeah. Nico has a friend. And then the mama creature. Similar, like semi-crustacean, very Lovecrafty.
That's like, right. Good call.
Yeah, that's what made deep me cut. I don't think it's the same species or anything like that, though. That thing was massive.
No,
it wasn't noted as such, so I don't think so. But we can have like more random sea creatures. Why not?
Yeah,
I always like goat eyes. They're cool.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that was a very. I love how the eyes were purple with like the black stripe through it because it was very similar to Ventress's like shoulder pad with the black snake.
Totally.
And like I don't know. I mean,
could you tell what that was? It looked like a cog, but it was like a. I didn't really recognize the symbol.
Apparently, it was a snake. Yeah.
Oh, weird! I couldn't
see a snake.
So a combination of looking at too many reference photos for Friends already, and in the breakdown of the guide breakdown today, there's a lot of information about like the Ventress's like look and her new outfit, in which it's like a weird combination of the bounty hunter look that we see in the Clone Wars at the end, and then the new shoulder pad and just new stuff. And so it is like the little black snake, in which I believe in Dark Disciple, he kills the snake. I'm like fuzzy on the details. There's something about a black snake, like in Dark Disciple, and please don't come after me with pitchforks, but I haven't finished reading it.
Very similar.
But the episode guide points out that she wears the snake in the Clone Wars. Like that's a carryover from her outfit in Clone Wars.
Yeah.
Was the snake pauldron.
Exactly. But there's also something about a black snake.
Misunderstood, like a snake.
Yeah.
Is misunderstood.
Is that what it says in the guide?
That's what it said.
That's
in the
what
guide.
It says in the guide. Okay. That's
it
what it says in the guide.
That she's like misunderstood. Yeah.
Snakes are often misunderstood.
So angsty.
And because during the story, she sheds her skin.
Ooh. Oh, okay.
Oh.
That's also
and
true.
Grows hair.
It grows hair. Like hair a snake.
Was... Oh. Cute little bangs, just like a snake.
Okay. Yep.
Exactly.
Speaking I like her
I
wet
dug,
hair.
I dug
look.
The underwater mohawk look, and then when she came
yeah,
back,
that was awesome.
Back
yeah,
second,
yeah, like, I like that.
Look. That's a forget, look right there.
Forget wet hair hunter. I like wet hair ventress. Right, Jamie.
Yeah.
You get it now. You get it. Even though I was deprived, now you get it.
No, I get it. I'm here. I got it. I got what anyway. I wanted.
What do you suppose the relationship between Fennec Shand and Asajj Ventress like? What does that look like, and how did that start?
I'd say it's some sort of like informer network because like Fennec has like ears on the ground for like everything. And I think that also for Ventress, she also just has ears on the ground for absolutely everything and just like knows how to get like context and stuff. And like one of the first things she says to the Bad Batch is she like warns them that they shouldn't be asking around about things like M count because people will find out.
Right.
So it's possible that like maybe she even heard about it before Fennec even approached her, that the group of them was like talking about it because she found it very easily. Found
I think
them
they met
easily.
In a bar fight.
That's possible. I like that too. I like
that's
that too.
Very possible.
100%.
This might upset some people, but I think it would be great if they took this opportunity to co-opt part of the legend story and the Mara Jade and Luke Skywalker dynamic, and gave it to Fennec Shand and Asajj Ventress, and say that Fennec was hired, tracked her down, fell in love with her, and now is helping keep her off the radar of the Empire.
I'm living for that agenda. Absolutely. I enjoy that. That's a good one. That's okay. It. That's the one. That's
do we
the
think
one.
Quinlan is still
that's
out
the
there?
One.
Is there
oh,
a love
yeah.
triangle between Quinlan?
I think if anyone's going to be into Polly, it would be Quinlan. He's a pretty open-minded dude.
Yeah, that's
I
that's
pretty
that.
Open. Well, maybe Kiadi Mundi.
Wow. he was allowed.
Yeah. It's not fun once it's allowed.
He
had 8 wives, and you know that he was the kind of dude that like gets home from work and sits in his car in the driveway for like an extra 5 minutes before he goes into the house.
His really tall car.
Yeah, the cone shaped fucking Geo Metro.
Or he just has a sunroof, and it's like
yeah. The sunroof is just constantly open, and his the top of his not head with little ponytails like flying
yeah,
around.
He, just, oh he actually just uses a sunroof because it's too expensive to get the custom top.
Yeah,
so it's raining. He's sitting there just like, oh.
So he's got to wear a raincoat like cone on top.
Oh yep. My God.
He borrowed it from Dan Aykroyd. It's all good.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay, so the way where this like leaves off with is
how did we get there?
I don't know, but I'm moving on. She warns them that, well, first of all, we get the actual like ass hair interaction of like Crosshair helping Omega onto the ship and then helping Ventress onto the ship, which like that's huge. Like that's all I'm saying. That's all
I will say. She did hit him harder than she hit Hunter and Wrecker.
What does that mean?
That's her love language.
With more passion behind it. She knocked him out, you know?
That's
anyway.
Her love language.
Something animalistic about it.
Ass hair.
Yeah.
So,
I'm so sorry. I can't help it, man.
It's all good.
No,
everywhere I go.
It happens.
I'm surprised we didn't get more derailed like during this thing, actually.
I do apologize. Time. I'm like an ADHD Kool-Aid man. It just happens on a podcast.
It's pretty bad here.
That's why we. That's what we like.
The way that this ends with Ventress warning that they're not as safe as they think they are on Pabu. Yeah,
I mean, if she can find them.
Yeah.
Yep.
And they never explain how she found them.
She doesn't need to. She doesn't need to explain how she found
well,
them.
You know
also,
happen?
How the heck
here's
did she?
Theory. That hey, sea ahead. Monster is gonna swim all the way to a holo terminal and be like, "Listen, guys, these fucking assholes woke me up and shot at me. I think you need to call the Empire."
You just see like the pentacle just like slap like a computer, just being like, yeah. That's the signal that goes out.
Inevitably, a fleet's showing up and we're getting a base Delta Zero, and Pabu is going to get leveled. And they're just going to cut to the corner of that monster, being like, those are the guys right over there.
Pointing yep, those are the
two. Officers.
This monster is the key to all of it. All of this. What
this
is his name
true.
Again? The Ver.
He's a Vrathian.
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 Vern the Vrathian.
Vernon.
Vernon.
Anyway, I love how Ventress's little tale ended up with, but I've got a few lives left. And that was like
yes,
enough of saying.
That was perfect.
It was she's enough of
acknowledging it.
Good stuff. I don't think we'll see her again in this season, but I think that we definitely will in the future, just based on the episode alone, but also based on all of the content that's come out of the past day with literally her voice actress like saying, yeah, there's gonna be something casually.
Yeah.
So
yeah, what a great prediction. So, like, I don't know, there might be more.
I feel like it's like pretty obvious that like that sets up something for the future, but with the state of the fandom, they really have to like hold some hands and walk people through some rudimentary thinking and be like, this isn't a retcon.
Let me pull this up again.
Explanation.
We don't want to spoil anything, but we want fans to know that the new Ventress storytelling will align with the events of Dark Disciple from Brad Rao. I feel like that needs to be said again.
Yeah.
Just so we
know. For everyone in the back.
For everyone in the back who didn't get that, everybody getting this. There's again the moment in Frozen Empire where they reference that line from the first movie. Everybody getting this. Anyway, I'm still on Ghostbusters, obviously. I'm sorry. Anyway, I think that pretty much like sums up the episode at this point. So from here, where do you think that we're going to go from here?
Bad things.
Batch. Yep.
Bad batch
is going to be in it.
I think the sunny weather is gone in a big way, you know. That last episode was overcast for a reason, because now it's going to be downhill, you know. We've got the repercussions, shall we say, to all the people that have helped the Bad Batch. We're going to be seeing that happen pretty soon. And Pabu, I think, is next up on that list. We also have to mount the clone rescue from Tantus that Echo and Rex are working so hard towards. I try hard not to be cynical, and I try not to hard to just use deductive reasoning, but like, there's a shit ton of clones left in the show. This is the final season. A couple years from now, there's almost no clones. That doesn't send an optimistic message for how this thing's going to wrap up.
Yeah, observation is not cynicism. It's just observation.
After Rogue One, we know that they're not afraid of going that way for an ending also, you know? Not everybody gets plot armor in the finale.
When are we going to see Cody?
When are we going to see Echo again?
They're deliberately making us forget about Cody so he can come in clutch in the very last episode.
Mm.
They want us to forget all about him so he can show up. Like Gandalf at the very
end. The dude
in the Lord of the Rings.
Independence Day. Yeah, dude in Lord of the Rings with the beard.
or what's his face? Dude in Pineapple Express with the Day Wulanza.
Yeah. Yes, Red.
Red. Cody's gonna come in and smash someone with the Day Wu.
He's nearly like dead and everything. I guess.
Yeah. He has the neck brace on.
Cody.
That's gonna go down.
That's really
top tier reference. I love that movie.
It's really good.
Underrated.
Very.
It really is.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Pabu is going to probably get leveled. It's going to be sad.
Oh, also, I'm a tech truther. I believe tech will be revealed in the next few episodes as a shadow operative, or at least as an antagonist of some sort that they're going to have to get through to kind of thing.
So
that's going to be a crosshair.
It's going to be a reversal, because Tech's the one that tried to convince Crosshair to come back and failed. Crosshair's going to convince Tech to come back.
Next week's episodes, it's two episodes next week. I believe it's Identity Crisis, and I forget the name of the second one. But we literally have an episode coming up that's called Identity Crisis. Oh, so
No Way Back, or not? What's it called?
I don't know.
I'm looking up the episode.
What do you think?
I think that's a red herring. I don't think that'll be about Tech. I think that's going to be about Hunter trying to cut his bangs.
And he's gonna cut him wrong, and that's it.
He's gonna accidentally cut it into a different style. He's gonna be like, "Who am I?"
Yeah,
he's gonna take the headband off. Actually, finally, and we are going to see that his forehead is actually.
Oh God, like, it's in a smoky situation. He just has like going straight up,
and the tattoo cuts off like right here.
Yeah, exactly. Right in the headband.
What if he has a tattoo of the headband under the headband?
Dude, yes, and it's red, and it's literally like taking off the sunglasses to reveal more sunglasses underneath.
Yeah.
Yep, that's it.
I would not be surprised. AJ, while you're looking that up, I'm actually going to do...
Point of no return.
He should have
the most incredible tan line right there, honestly.
Oh my God.
He probably
God.
Does. It's
he
probably
definitely
bad.
Does. That's probably why he doesn't take it off. He's embarrassed.
He's too embarrassed.
I don't blame him.
Yeah, he looks like Crosshair for like 3 inches going across the top. Or Tech, even.
So we have Identity Crisis and Point of No Return next week, so... Let's
Point
see.
Of no return doesn't sound fun.
No, not for anyone.
No. For me.
Hmm.
Okay, Matt. I know. I don't know why you're enjoying pain, but okay.
I enjoy Star Wars pain. I don't know.
I almost wish I hadn't found out that McPoyle from It's Always
Sunny. He's unlocked.
I know.
Because it's really hard to divorce him from that.
Dude,
role.
Dude, same. It is. Every time I hear his voice, I'm like, oh my God, it's McPoyle.
He is great, though. He's a great guy. I always
Nala say, and he's like, you will call Omega. I'm like, don't say that. Come on. You will call her.
Oh my god. Let's switch really quick. We'll do character of the week.
Character of the week.
This is just we all go around and pick who our favorite character this week was. By the end of the season, we'll try to do a compilation of what all of our picks have been, and someone will be character of the season. I don't know who.
John Kyle. Kid.
Yep.
Yeah. Kyle, who was your favorite character this week? Who would you say character of the week is for you?
Oh, I'm trying to think of someone other than Ventress because I feel so low hanging fruit. But honestly, it was just so cool to see her. I got to give it to Ventress. It was so fun. I feel so proud of her. I feel like I've seen a kid grow up. You know where she's come to.
I know
from back in season one of the Clone Wars.
It's like one of those things is of
it was too special.
It's she's just as beautiful as the day we last saw you. I'm just so happy to see her. AJ. Character of the week?
Ooh, me second. Throws me
off. Yeah, sure, why not?
Vernon the Sea Monster.
Yeah.
I knew you were going to say
that. Vrathian.
The Vrathian.
Vernon Vrathian.
Do you think he knows Scuba Stev?
I hope so.
Yes.
Maybe.
He will. He will at some point.
Scuba Stev definitely knows him. If it's not the other
one. Yeah. They met in a bar fight.
I was going to say they went to high school together.
Ooh, that, yeah.
And then they got in a bar fight.
Yeah. There was a bar in the high school.
Yeah. Yep.
Of course. As there. Matt.
I'm gonna have to give it to Ventress as well. She was fantastic.
Yeah. Like if you're giving it to Ventress, I'm changing my answer to Vernon because he needs more support.
Hey, two V characters, that's fine. Vernon, Ventress. What do we got?
For me.
Yeah.
Well, honorary character of the week is the fact that the new ship is called Asshair. actual pick for character of the week is Omega, because she's going through her journey right now, and we obviously don't know what the result is going to be, but she is the star of the show, and she really did shine this episode, and I'm really nervous for the future at the end of the day. Also, honorary mention, Wrecker, for literally the one noise that he made of when Ben just looked back at him for the binoculars. It was just laughing at it.
And the twitch.
And the twitch. Yeah.
This really was a Wrecker-heavy episode, yeah. This was, yeah.
The last two were.
All about him.
All about him.
Cal, really quickly, how did you feel about the alligators last week?
Ooh, crocodiles, actually. Crocodiles.
I enjoyed it. It was all quite Space Florida, wasn't it?
Yep. Yeah. It was.
They were a pretty big deal. Loved
when
them.
The trailer came out, Matt's number one thing he was fascinated on was the crocodiles.
I just wanted to see them.
I loved Wrecker's no hesitation, just jumping in there to help Hunter. Like that was quite the bro move. You really felt the relationship there. And man, anytime Ming-Na Wen shows up, you know you're gonna have a good time. Like you can't not have a good time with a Fennec interlude. And so absolutely. I was grinning the whole time.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Nice crocodile
interview. I'm really tickled by the fact that like she can't hide how much fun she's having being in Star Wars. Like even in a serious scene, you can hear her smiling as she reads the takes.
grinning the whole time.
I'm convinced that there are certain scenes in Book of Boba Fett where they made her put the helmet on because she couldn't stop grinning. They had to hide her mouth.
She loves Star Wars so much, and it shows. So
she really kills that character. Like. Is amazing as that character. It almost kills the character. It sounds weird. But I see
brought her back.
This is the way exactly. This is the way brings up. I saw this earlier too, that some people have seen some of the rest of the season except the finale, and that it's like very, very dark. And some of the craziest animated Star Wars we've seen. So I'm ready for it.
I'm ready.
I'm ready too.
Matt wants pain.
I don't know if I'm ready. I can't say I'm ready. It scares me, the thought of the show ending.
Like, each week, the episodes do actually sneak up on me. Like, I forget that it's, like, that Wednesday morning and whatnot for us. Like, when they, like, drop or it's, like, Tuesday at like 3 a.m. Anyway, I forget when I get up Wednesday morning to watch the show that it's actually like out, and it's going to hurt when it's over. And I'm not looking forward to that at all.
I made the decision a couple episodes ago to stop staying up late and watching it right when it comes out. I just get a good night's sleep and then watch it when I'm good and ready and rested. And it's really improved my watching experience.
Agreed.
I highly recommend that. Anyone that's like feeling a little sleepy by the time the episode comes out, like, no, watch it the next day. It's not worth it. You will miss things, you know?
Yeah.
And as sad as I am for the end of this show, I'm very excited for whatever's coming next in Star Wars animation, because you know Star Wars animation ain't going anywhere.
That's what I was going to ask you. Do you think, where do you think they go next with animation, other than like Tales of the Jedi and stuff like that? Do you think we see obviously a continuation of this story?
I think we're going to jump across the trilogy again, and we're going to start bridging that gap between originals and sequels, and it's probably going to be focused around Luke's Jedi Academy on Osis. That would be my guess.
That's it.
And to respond to Ice's comment from like ages ago, I don't think that it's a guarantee that if they go to Luke's Academy, they get murdered by Kylo. There's no way in hell how Grogu goes out of this story.
Yeah, right? No.
Not going to happen. It's not going to happen. There's going to be plenty of other explanations.
Yeah.
I hope you're right. I'd love to see that.
If it happens, I will eat a Gonk droid.
All right. You will eat Gonky. You will eat your Gonky droid.
I mean,
that'd be sad.
Fuck it. Yeah, this is pretty big, but I use some trick photography and I'll eat a really small one instead.
Yeah. Make it look
big. There we go.
Don't admit it on air.
I don't want to force that upon you. So I hope that just the shows happen and we enjoy them. Anyway,
it'll never happen. They're never going to kill off Grogu at the hands of Kylo Ren. That's not a scenario that I have to worry about.
A cute little merchandisable character that lives for thousands of years. They're not going to waste that opportunity.
And that is played by a puppet, so they don't even need to keep casting an actor. Like,
exactly.
It's the only reason they were able to preserve like what is possibly one of the greatest reveals in television history. Grogu in that first episode.
Yeah.
If they'd cast a person to play Grogu, it would have got out. There would have been a call sheet. There would have been a casting thing. There would have been a makeup fitting. No, all these things with so many people involved, like there's no way it would have been contained. But because it's a goddamn puppet and they can literally put their star actor in a suitcase when they're not like filming, there's no way that could leak.
Now I'm like picturing a human cast Grogu, just like little all guy right. walking around painted green.
We're getting way off, and I did not want to dive into the Grogu conversation tonight, but somehow we dove into it. I don't want to be there, so let's get out of there. thank you so much for joining us tonight, Kyle. We had an absolute blast having you on.
Thank you for dealing with me tonight.
You're good. Thank
we love
you
that at all.
It was joining our chaos. Where this can is, people yeah. find you on social media, on your accounts, and what are you working on?
You can find me on YouTube as Kyle Katarn. You can also find me on Instagram, Twitter, or the other thing that it's called now. I'm also on Blue Sky and Threads, which are still in their infancy, but you can find me there too. My handle's pretty much the same everywhere. It's Kyle Katarn, except for on Twitter, where the L is a numeral 1, because some smart aleck out there got the name before I did. So. What are you going to do? I do reactions and reviews to all things Star Wars related, whether that is official episodes coming out on Disney+, official comic books coming out every Wednesday. I'll do dramatic readings of those on the channel. And I'll react to fan films every single Monday. I've been watching Star Wars fan films for a couple of years now, actually. I've seen hundreds of fan films, and I'm trying to react to every single one ever made. So if you have one for me, throw me a link. I've got a Discord server. I can provide a link to that in the description of this, too. Help me on my quest to review and react to every single Star Wars fan film. That's kind of the main basis of the channel right now.
Yeah,
I like it.
Well, thank you. Thank you again for joining us. And so I've been Jamie with Matt and AJ. We've been the Holonet Marauders. You can find us everywhere on social media at Holonet Marauders. This was a Bad Batch recap for season 3, episode 9, The Harbinger. We'll be back next week with another special guest for more Bad Batch discussions. And so we'll see you guys next week on the Holonet Marauders podcast. Thank you, everyone.